Hey,
hey, when you hear that sound, you know that you're listening to an episode of Spiritual Perspectives. Spiritual Perspectives coming to you live from KEST 1450 AM. Spiritual Perspectives is a program where we take a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. My name is Scout Bartlett. I'll be your host, and we'll be cruising right through letting you know about some fabulous stuff. Now, our guest today, I got to speak with him, several years back. It was a wonderful conversation, so we're really excited to have him back again. This is an individual that just like I started in the Midwest, he grew up in Wisconsin in the farmland and was sort of expected to follow a traditional family path, when what he found is that he was led in a completely different direction, a direction that's changed and shuffled a few times until it landed him in a state of healing. He's going to be presenting a webinar hosted by the First Church of Christ Science Los Altos. So effectively, he's going to be local, even though he'll be doing it online. But everybody, I would like to introduce you to our guest today, Chet Manchester. Everybody, this is Chet. Chet, this is everybody.
Good to be with you again, Scott.
I know when we talked last time, we shared about the fact that we sort of both came out of a Midwestern background that expected us to follow a much more traditional direction, and instead ended up sort of hanging a sharp left into a, well, oddly enough, into a spiritual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
How did that unfold for you, Chet, that you shifted out of following into the family prediction and into a completely different way?
Well, you know, I can remember vividly my freshman quarter at Dartmouth College on the East Coast, having, you know, grown up in this small town in the Middle West and being out there in a pretty heady environment. And a lot of intelligent people. One of my first classes was with some professors who were doing some computer modeling on things like climate change and some of the, you know, big problems that humanity was facing. And I would come back from those classes kind of just shaking my head, thinking, you know, we are so smart as a society, but we're not spiritually enlightened. You know, we lack heart. We lack the capacity to love, the capacity to cooperate, the capacity to heal, you know, using this innate spirituality that we all have. And so I, at this time, my freshman quarter, I got to know Mary Vicaretti's writings and her principal work, Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures. And I, you know, they engaged me on such a deep level, thinking, you know, here's a woman that was really, throughout her life, exploring how Jesus healed and seeing in that healing practice these underlying divine laws that could be understood and applied to all the problems that we face, and more than anything, bringing out how we practice the love that was really the heartbeat of that early Christian movement. It wasn't about doctrine, it wasn't about personality. It was really a love-based community, and I think that that's, you know, regardless of whatever faith or no faith that people have today, we all want to know, how do we love more? How do we, you know, practice a genuine love for each other?
Mm-hmm. So you've got a talk that you've actually titled Aha Moments That Heal. Mm-hmm. I know I've had those aha moments, but I always have a difficult time trying to describe to anybody else an aha moment. It's either they've had one or they haven't. How do you talk about that aha moment part, Chet?
Well, you know, sometimes you get the cartoons with a little light bulb above somebody's head. You know, they have a moment of illumination. It's just a sudden glimpse. It can be, you know, like, I know what car I want to get. You know, I'm in the market for a car, and it's just dawned on me what I need to get, or what college to go to, or who to marry. You know, a lot of the aha moments we have are, you know, about the kinds of things we're thinking about, the decisions we're making. But the deeper aha moments, I believe, are about discoveries we make regarding the nature of God, you know, the big questions in life. And so those aha moments, I think it's not just brain power. You know, it's not just a little, you know, neuron firing up, you know, upstairs, but it's really a deeper source of light. That's what I talk about in my webinar is what is that deeper source of illumination that really does reveal to us, you know, light up in our thought and reveal something new, something very new about the nature of God and our relationship to God. And I should mention, you know, gosh, I'm sure there are people listening to this program today who are, when I use that word God, you know, out comes that, you know, that sense of a man-like figure who's kind of keeping track of your mistakes. And that's really not what I mean. It's not what Christian Science teaches about God. We really think of God as the very divine principle of the universe, that organizing intelligence and consciousness, and it is love. You know, it's a love-based, all-pervading intelligence that is really guiding us and speaking to us when we're listening. And so that's what I'm speaking of. It's not this sort of man-like figure, but making a discovery about that deeper dimension of life, that spiritual dimension. To me, that's what's at the heart of these aha moments.
Yeah, I know I grew up in a Protestant church. I was mostly raised in a Presbyterian church, nothing for or against them. It was a good education for me. But I know I grew up as a kid picturing God as an old dude with a long white beard sitting in a great big chair that held some people in his right hand and some people in his left hand according to some creed that I could never quite keep track of. And I sort of left that old dude in a chair picture behind somewhere along the way when I kind of noticed that the God presence in us is not dependent on arms or legs.
It's
really a whole different part of us that is that God presence within.
Yeah, you can see, you know, Mary Baker Eddy had a unique perspective on the Bible. She didn't think you could take it literally, you know, from beginning to end. If you interpret the Bible literally, you know, it then becomes a war of opinions and doctrines, and we find ourselves having the very kind of religious battles that sometimes, you know, rage around the world. But we had to dig in deeper and find the spiritual meaning, the inspired meaning, the more universal sense. And you know, she really looked at the Bible as this progressive, unfolding, enlightening view of the divine nature. So, you know, in the the Holy Bible that a lot of people are familiar with, you have more of a man-like figure in the Old Testament. I mean, really, you read these passages, and, you know, it's a scary God often because it's someone who's, you know, on your side one day and then totally, you know, wiping you out the next day if you haven't followed the instructions right.
Right.
And but then you get, you know, as you move forward, you get this more enlightened view. It comes along, especially in what we know as the New Testament or the Gospels, where this carpenter, this religious figure comes forward, this humble man and this healer, Jesus of Nazareth, and he defines God and illustrates the nature of God as impartial, unconditional love. And he begins to teach a view that enrages the religious people of the time. I mean, they couldn't stand this view because, you know, it meant a loss of their political and religious power. And he was teaching this loving your neighbor as yourself, but also this deeply spiritual view of God, that God is not a person. But he taught that God was spirit, not just present at the temple in Jerusalem, but ever-present everywhere, universally. And Mary Baker Eddy, in her own research into the Bible, saw this progressive, more spiritual view of God emerging and really saw that as taking place even today. I mean, it's taking place through the centuries, that we're gaining a more enlightened view of the divine nature. And she just saw that was, you know, the deeper we went into the inquiry of God, the more... Well, we're going to see more commonality, really. It's she began to see that there was a universal science or laws of good, laws of God that could be understood and applied in healing in our lives. And that's what she would end up calling the science of Christianity. So she didn't see Jesus as a miraculous healer, but as somebody who just understood the way things worked. He just had a sense of that deeper nature of love and how love unconditionally loves us and sees our innocence and maintains our innocence. And, you know, it's a very love-based perspective that she brings out.
It's interesting. I sort of cracked a mental joke, as you pointed out, that she didn't see this fabulous teacher, Jesus. She didn't see him as a miraculous healer, but somebody that actually understood how things worked, and therefore it wasn't a miracle. And it just made me think of a comment a friend of mine made the other day, which she said, I think teenagers are kind of unsettling everywhere I meet them except at Fry's Electronics in the computer section, at which point they are gods. Which it turns out they don't think they're a miracle. They just actually know how the things work.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, there's a doctor out in Boston. He wrote a review. It was published in the Washington Post in March, and he teaches, I think it's psychology, and Harvard-trained medical school. And he's very convinced that, you know, these what we call miraculous events, especially, you know, people that have been diagnosed with terminal illnesses and they, you know, they recover. And the medical community say, well, that's spontaneous remission. You know, they give it, they kind of cast it aside. And he said, you know, these kinds of experiences need to be studied. And he's come to the conclusion after studying about 100 of them that that the term miracle in its traditional sense is the setting aside of the normal laws is completely inaccurate. That what we think of as miraculous healing or spiritual healing, he says in his words, indicates spiritual laws we don't yet understand. And so his part of his quest as a doctor now is to understand these underlying laws at work that have resulted in profound transformation of people's lives and their health. And I sent him a note of thanks for his article in the Post, and I gave him Mary Baker Eddy's definition of miracle, which she published, you know, 1875. So, you know, it's a long time ago this woman had this insight, but she defines miracle in her book as that which is divinely natural but must be learned humanly. And, you know,
I'm
very
sorry to
similar
interrupt, Chet.
To what
you say that again. She defines a miracle as?
Yeah, a miracle as that which is divinely natural but must be learned humanly.
Divinely natural but must be learned humanly. I love that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when you think of Jesus' healing work, you know, many people see him in light of sort of a miraculous wonder worker that he's coming along and setting aside the normal laws of biology and physics. And, you know, he's walking on water. He's, you know, he's healing a leper. He's throwing aside the normal laws that we are all dealing with every day. And in comes this super law. But from Mary Baker Eddy's perspective, she was really seeing that he wasn't putting aside the laws, but rather revealing these deeper laws of God, these deeper laws of health and wholeness. And he defined them in, I mean, the language that we're familiar with in the Bible is the kingdom of heaven. You know, you can think of in modern language, the government of God, the government of love, you know, the laws of good. That these laws are at work on our behalf, and we just have to understand them.
That's the interesting part about Christian Science, because I have an engineering degree, and I was educated in science my whole life, early part of my life, and I always looked at that word science as being the study of things and looking for, call it a theory or an hypothesis, that you could then demonstrate by being able to get repeated results. If you knew that if you did this, you'd get a repeated result. And I find that when I'm talking about Mary Baker Eddy's work, that word science in Christian Science seems to carry a very similar definition.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, she really did feel that the healing work that Jesus initiated and told others to do it. I mean, he took students for 3 years and he trained them and he worked with them constantly. So he clearly wanted to pass along the knowledge. And, you know, he said things like, the works that I do, you will do also, and greater works, if we can believe that. You know, you're going to understand more and more about this healing principle and you're going to prove it. And, you know, she really felt that the Christianity that he was teaching, or the, you know, that truth that he was bringing out, could be applied and proven and consistently. And so it wasn't, you know, Christian Science is not faith healing. It's really the furthest thing from faith healing. It's healing based on an understanding of the divine nature, understanding God, and particularly God as spirit, this presence and immortal power, you know, that's beyond the flesh, beyond what we call matter, and that we're actually made in the image and likeness of spirit. We're our deepest core of our being is spiritual. And that we could prove this out through healing. That's the science of Christianity. And, you know, she, there's no other explanation for how a woman in the 19th century with no means at all. I mean, when she first started working with these ideas, she was penniless. She had no college degree. She had no powerful friends.
And quite ill, as I recall.
Yeah, very, you know, chronically ill, until this experience where she glimpses this science in her life. She glimpses these underlying laws and has a transforming experience. And, you know, from that point forward, she's really feeling that this is not a miracle. What I experienced here in my own life following decades of chronic illness, this was not miraculous. This was in accord with divine law, and I'm going to understand it. And she devotes the rest of her life to understanding that law, writing about it, publishing it, and she established a college in Boston to teach it. That's kind of how it began to spread out around the world. And then she established a church when the churches of her time, you know, slammed their door in her face and said, "We don't want anything to do with this. This is heretical teaching." Mm-hmm. But, you know, a century later, a lot of what Christian Science is teaching, people are going, "Oh yeah, I relate to that."
Yeah, yeah, I'm spiritual, not religious. I recognize what you're talking about. And I want to bring mm-hmm. that point out that while we're using some fairly touchy words here like God and mm-hmm. church mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. Bible and mm-hmm. Jesus, mm-hmm. what we're really talking about is a set of information that many mm-hmm. people who consider themselves spiritual, not religious, is one of those categories mm-hmm. now, would find yeah. that this is a resource that would fit with what they've been thinking so that they wouldn't have to be inventing all of their own wheels. So while we're talking about the church itself, there's three things I'd like to touch on real quickly, and I apologize, Chet, but I just want to hit them really quickly so that people don't get confused. Christian Science is not Scientology. Let's just get that one just plainly, comfortably said. Christian Science was developed by Mary Baker Eddy, who studied spiritual laws. Scientology was written by L. Ron Hubbard, who I don't know about his spiritual laws, but I know he wrote decent science fiction.
And no, as far as I know, there's no relation to Christianity. I mean, that's the biggest factor. I mean, Mary Baker Eddy grew up in a deeply religious home and was a spiritual seeker all her life. So Christian Science is founded on Christianity.
And then a second piece that I want to get out of the way is that there's no rule that if you study Christian Science or if you drop into one of their reading rooms and look at the cool stuff they've got or go to a Christian Science church, there's also no rule that says you can't go to a doctor if you would choose to.
That's right. That's right. She, excuse me there. In the opening of her book, Science and Hell, she says the time for thinkers has come. And in the original edition she published in 1875, the next line was, "And the time for revolutions has come."
Nice.
she kind of calmed that thought down a little bit. But her book is revolutionary. She doesn't state that overtly in the opening lines. But the time for thinkers has come. She really encouraged people to think for themselves. And so there's nothing in Christian Science that's dogmatic or that says you have to do this, you can't do that. It's really encouraging you to think deeply and spiritually for yourself. That also means being willing to think for yourself when it comes to healthcare choices.
Yes.
And not just go along with the latest, you know, illness or diagnosis or, you know, you got to do this, you got to take that. She felt that many of the treatments in her day really were more harmful than they were good, and that they oftentimes, the medical treatments, weren't really getting at the root issue, which she felt always there was something deeper, something on a more mental level that needed to be set right. It could be fear. It could be stress. It could be the threat of theology hanging over your head, the sense of being guilty, being a sinner, you know, that these states of thought were very damaging. They really did have an impact, often a negative impact on people's health. So her sense was that a true view of what Christ Jesus taught was about liberating people from fear and from the sense of sin. You know, it doesn't mean we go around doing whatever we want to do. We do have to bring our lives in accord with love and love-based outlook on life and, principle-based outlook on life. You know, we need to express integrity and honesty and faithfulness and all that sort of stuff. But the view of being a born sinner and destined to a life of suffering, she challenged that to the core. And she felt that these ideas often really did cause great damage to people's health.
And the third thing that I've found is, because I'm not raised Christian Scientist, I have now been in Christian Science churches, and I've had this amazing gig that allows me to talk to rock star thinkers in the world of spiritual healing, which I just treasure. Wonderful to talk with you again after 5 years.
Yeah.
It sort of missed you.
Yeah, likewise.
There's a real place here where what I found out about Christian Science is that it's really it's the same as any other spiritual practice that I look into when I look into it cleanly. I've noticed that people have wanted me to follow them who did not want me to think. They wanted me to do what they told me to do and
right.
do it the way
right.
they told me to rather than experiment it and experience it. And I found that the Christian Science churches don't even have a guy or gal in a fancy robe up at the front telling everybody right. what to think and telling everybody what the Bible means.
Yeah, it's one of the unique aspects of her. The church, as she envisioned it, was that it really should be more of a grassroots egalitarian approach where, you know, it's really a community of spiritual thinkers that come together to each week. The Sunday service, for example, isn't based on somebody's personal sermon or personal point of view, but it's based on a Bible lesson that the whole congregation has been reading during the week. And it's always bringing out this deeper spiritual dimension of healing and looking into, themes like life, truth, love, the God, the only cause and creator, these kinds of subjects where we really probe into the deeper inspired view of life and how this results in healing. So we come together and we read the Bible lesson together, and includes hymns and a solo, inspired song during the hour. But it's not reliant on one person's point of view, that kind of governs the church. It really is more each individual's spirituality.
Yeah. And it really is an open door to think and explore. And I'll mention that Christian Science has a tremendous history of people going into spontaneous remission of remarkable things on a physical level. And it's not even like the physical healings are the center point. They're just sort of the side effects that prove the theory.
Yeah. I love the way you put that. It's the natural effect of this deeper relationship to the divine, understanding ourselves in a more spiritual way. A lot of people who began reading Mary Baker Eddy's work in the 19th century went into it with no expectation of physical healing, but they came out transformed. Their thought changed. It shifted. These fears they'd been feeling, the diagnosis that was hanging over their head like a death sentence. These mental things were really changed as they read about this view of God as spirit, themselves as spiritual, God as love, constant, changeless love. Gaining this enlightened view, they were changed from the inside out, and they found themselves healed. And it was really that healing impact on people's lives that enabled Mary Baker Eddy to launch a whole movement that eventually spread around the world. But it was the practical impact in people's lives.
Yeah, a real seeing that, holy cow, that must have done something, because something actually changed.
Mm-hmm. Right. And it's the most natural thing. You called healing a byproduct. It absolutely is. I remember one of the first healing experiences I had as a teenager. My mom was a spiritual seeker and my dad was an agnostic. And They raised us to, think for ourselves. But my dad's best friend was a doctor, and I'd often go and see this wonderful man when things would come off. He lived not too far away from our home, and I remember having this terrible case of strep throat and went to visit Dr. Weston, and he prescribed penicillin, and he said, "Chet, you stay in bed." You know, I was an avid athlete, so he didn't want me, sneaking out and, trying to stay fit for the next basketball game. But, it was a couple weeks of, just a pretty arduous experience, with this case of strep throat. And so when this came up the next winter, I spoke with my mom and I said, you've been telling me about this Christian Science practitioner who you can call. And, practitioners are basically the people who practice this science and are available to anyone. And she gave me the number of this woman that was local. And I called her, and, she didn't talk about my body and what my body was doing. What she did was she focused on some of these fears I'd been feeling at this point in my life, a deep sense of alienation. My parents were splitting up, and there was stress at school, and she really began to help me understand how loved I was and the nature of God as love and the stability of this love in my life. It didn't matter what was going on around me, but this love was a stabilizing influence in my life. And, she actually said very little to me on that first phone call, but my head kind of hit the pillow. She encouraged me just to rest. And when I awakened, I was completely well. I mean, there was no recovery. It was the very same condition that I'd had the year before, but I'd felt the touch of this love. I'd felt the presence of this divine love in my life. And it had touched me deeply, and the outcome was a body that was completely well. And that kind of, launched me on this inquiry, like, what just happened here? Yeah. What took place?
Seems a reasonable question.
Gosh, the healing experiences I've had now spanning about 50 years, they've been so consistent and so, just transforming. So I've relied on Christian Science all my life now.
There's a phrase that I frequently repeat here in Spiritual Perspectives, which is simply healing is not to be reserved for disease. I think mm-hmm. we want to talk about that word healing for a few moments mm-hmm. here, because it's not
sure.
just about, strep throat gone is a real mm-hmm. nice way to go, holy cow, there must be something to that thing that I just did. But healing is not only about disease.
No. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy said it's the smallest part of Christian Science, that, the healing of illness. And yet a very important part, because anybody who's not well, you feel your life limited on every side, often by physical illness. So you do want to break free. But the point is this, really, the point, and this is what I talk about in my webinar, is how do we have these illuminating moments, these aha moments, where we make discoveries, spiritual discoveries, that lead us to a new view of ourselves, a new view of life, a new way of interacting with others. It's a deeper relationship with God. Don't we all want to know the divine in a deeper way? Again, kind of get beyond the superstitious view of God to an understanding sense of God. And so the real point is this quest for understanding. And Jesus described it. He once said, seek first the kingdom of God, this understanding of God, and all the rest will come to you. It'll be added to you naturally, he said.
Nice.
So it is that, that spiritual understanding that we're seeking first and foremost.
So you mentioned your webinar, and we're going to just sort of break pace for a minute because there's so many more things I want to talk to you about.
Sure.
This is Scott Bartlett. You're listening to Spiritual Perspectives. We're chatting today with Chet Manchester. Chet is, first I want to thank the First Church of Christ Scientist of Los Altos for sponsoring our program today. They're also sponsoring Chet in a webinar. So let's give you those details real quickly.
Aha moments. We've all had them. Moments of sudden illumination and clarity. Have you ever had a moment like this that brought healing to your life? International speaker Chet Manchester, a practitioner of Christian Science Healing from New York, will be giving a free one-hour webinar to show you how you can. His webinar, Aha Moments That Heal, will be on Sunday, September 25th from 5 to 6 p.m. Register at ChristianScienceLosAltos.org.
Hey, if you're hearing that music, you know that this is an edition of Spiritual Perspectives, where we take a look at real life from, well, a spiritual perspective. This is Scout Bartlett. I'm your host. Glad to be here with you. And our guest today is Chet Manchester. As we just mentioned, he'll be doing a webinar on September 25th. You can register for that. And I have a note here that says that the First Church of Christ Science Los Altos is sponsoring that to you, so there is no charge to you. Register on their website, which is ChristianScienceLosAltos.org, not .net, ChristianScienceLosAltos.org. If you look up Chet Manchester, if you Google Chet Manchester in September 25th, it'll take you right into their website. I did that, and I double-checked it, and it's there. So, Chet, welcome back. This is everybody. This is Chet. Chet, this is everybody.
Great. Good to be having this discussion today, Scott. All right,
so now I'm going to spring one on you, because when I'm talking to people, I do a little bit of research, and I noticed that you and your beloved just bought yourself a cute little cottage there in upstate New York, I believe, which I believe is in itself, I looked at that and went, this is a miraculous example of healing is not to be reserved for disease. I'll let you tell it, because I don't want to get too personal here.
You want me to talk about how I arrived here in upstate New York?
Actually, how you got? Didn't you guys just recently get a rather notable home?
Well, you know, it's so funny the way those things work. We did buy a home here in upstate New York that belonged to some longtime friends of mine, and they happen to be, you know, some pretty successful designers and done some beautiful things with this home. And so, yeah, it was a home that I had visited before and really loved it. My wife and I were really seeking a place of, you know, just quiet and beauty and inspiration. And that's kind of how we ended up on the Finger Lakes of upstate New York. So, yeah, it's fun, you know, when you're praying about where to be and how to be a blessing to others and you know, just things like home in your life, you know, It's neat to see the way you can find guidance, and I'll have to just tell you one way I do that is I will just get very quiet and I'll just open up the Bible, just kind of get a sense of spiritual direction. You know, where are we being led here? And you know, it's not like you're saying, you know, God, you know, door A or door B, you know, but it's more that I like to feel that we're being led onto a path of inspiration that will give us what we ultimately need to make a good decision. You know, in this case, though, we had been thinking about coming up to this area, and we were familiar with this home and Kings Ferry, and yet it was kind of daunting because it was a you know, larger place than we really wanted or needed, and yet we felt like it would be a good base for the work that I do. You know, with involves some teaching and some, you know, this healing work, and so I'd opened up my Bible. I just said, you know, God, if this is really where we need to be, just let's just get some clarity here. And my eyes fell on this little phrase in the book of Acts, and it says, "And they stopped in Syracuse." believe it or not, Syracuse is in the Bible, and it's you know, of course, one of the islands and. Where Paul was traveling, and he was stopping in Syracuse for a few days. But it was pretty accurate to me. I mean, how often can you just find something so specific as that? And kind of there was enough inspiration leading us here that, you know, just made it feel like a right decision. And we're really here to bless. We feel like this, you know, this home has been a big blessing to us and others who've come, you know, here. I've been able to experience it, and so it is a beautiful, beautiful area of the country.
I have to say, I was looking at pictures of it online and thinking, okay, I'm ready to go visit Chet now and just hang out at his place for a while. The piece that caught my attention in terms of healing, though, is it seems that the original, and I know I'm getting way personal, but it seems the original asking price was probably beyond what you would have considered was something that you could make happen. And yet, in and among all of that, even with others seeming to want to make bigger offers, you guys ended up with this beautiful retreat that sings to your heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And these dear friends were so accommodating in terms of, you know, just what we could afford. You know, Sotheby's originally had it listed like through the roof, you know, and it was just way beyond our means. And so the price did come way down. And that was a part of just the unfoldment, I'd call it, so the beautiful idea unfolding like a flower, you know, is really made it doable for us. So. Mm-hmm. There have been a lot of beautiful things like that along the way.
Yeah, I look at that as healing as well. If I'm drawn mm-hmm. here, this seems like a great idea. And oh, look, they figured out that if they took some of the things that were originally included in the deal and made them elsewhere, then all of a sudden they yeah. could make us something make you a situation yeah. that you could reach, and you got to have mm-hmm. this beautiful retreat space.
Yeah, you know, there's a little phrase I think a lot about when it comes to all the things we do in our lives, you know, from the nitty gritty to the big decisions. And it's the phrase creative mind. You know, one of the synonyms Rebecca Reddy uses for God is divine mind, this source of intelligence. And to think that there's this infinite creativity, and we see it reflected all the time. I mean, beautiful creativity in the arts and the sciences, and, you know, people thinking outside the boxes. Really a reflection of this infinitely creative mind. And so often when I'm working with people, I encourage them to just be open to solutions that they hadn't yet thought of. You know, let creative mind speak to you and give you a perspective that you don't yet have. I think that is a big part of healing.
Which brought us back around to, and I just made a note here so I don't have it accurately, the quote you gave earlier, that a miracle is divinely natural but must be learned humanly.
Mm-hmm.
Stepping into
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
So there's a word here that I really am fascinated by, and so I want to ask you this, and again, I'm getting way personal because I'd like to know your definition, your experience, how you recognize it, how you label it. Chet, what is it that you say when you say you are praying or you prayed? What does that word prayer or pray mean for you personally?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's one of the really dynamic teachings in Mary Baker Eddy's writings that she opens her book, Science and Health, with a whole chapter on prayer.
Nice.
And in that chapter, she helps us understand that, you know, prayer is not so much asking God for things as it is bringing our own thought into harmony with what God knows already, what this infinite divine intelligence knows already. Jesus expressed it in terms of, you know, he said, your Father knows what you have need of before you ask him. Now, if that's true, and if you understand the nature of God as love, this loving Father, Mother, Creator knows you and your needs better than you do, and knows your needs before you even ask them. Well, wouldn't it stand to reason that a loving parent would also meet those needs, you know, supply what's needed? Of course. I mean, that's what Jesus was constantly proving. You know, when people were hungry in the middle of the wilderness one day, they had very little to eat. You know, he just acknowledged the abundance of good that was at hand and fed everybody. Like, let's just open our eyes to what's already present. So her sense of prayer, and what I've, you know, learned in my understanding of Christian Science, is that when I say I'm praying about something, what I'm doing is I'm affirming what I know to be true from God's perspective. What does a loving and good God, what is this loving and good God doing for me right now? What has divine love already provided for me? Health, wholeness, courage, a sense of purpose and place for my talents, you know, that this is provided already. In order to see that, though, I have to be willing to challenge the five senses, this what I call the flat earth view of life, you know, this limited perspective that is really more an expression of just the limited human mind's view. But this larger perspective that Christ Jesus was opening up for the world, you know, this is showing us, you know, things that are so much bigger than that limited flat earth view. It's like if you could, you know, get up in one of these, these rockets and go up and see the beauty of this planet from above, really see the wholeness and the integrity and the roundness, we'd see that it was never flat. We're not trying to heal it of being flat. You know, we're simply willing to change our perspective from the limited five senses view to this spiritually enlightened view.
Nice. So the talk that you're going to be doing, the webinar you're doing, Aha Moments That Heal, mm-hmm. What inspired you to go with the notion of aha moments, and particularly aha moments as a healing experience?
Well, I've realized in my life that the greatest moments of advancement and progress that I've experienced, that's included, across the board, progress. I'm just talking about health and life purpose and job and family, you know, all the progress you want to feel in life, mm-hmm. that progress has always come as a result of discovering something new about the divine nature, about God, and about my relationship to God. It always, that some limited view is giving way. And I realized the more I thought about those moments that they were characterized by a sense of discovery, spiritual discovery. It was really breathtaking what I was learning about God's greatness and allness and presence and tenderness and goodness, that this spiritual discovery was leading me to breakthroughs. And those mental and spiritual breakthroughs always resulted in progress and healing. So I thought, gosh, you know, I really would love to talk about these moments of breakthrough, these aha moments, discover them, and explore with my audience what's behind them, what really is the engine behind these illuminating moments.
What kind of response, because I know you travel, in addition to doing webinars, mm-hmm. I know you travel all over the place, nationally and mm-hmm. internationally. Mm-hmm. How are people responding? What sort of responses are you getting to this particular topic as you travel with it, Chet?
Well, you know, what I appreciate most on lecturing on Christian Science is that the more you help people understand it, the more people sort of really see it as their own. Like, I believe that, too. That's the way I think as well. And with these aha moments, what's been fun is how many people want to share theirs with me. It is a universal thing. I mean, these aha moments happen all the time. And people, I mean, I've, you know, really gained quite a list of extraordinary experiences people have had of spiritual illuminating moments that have changed the course of their lives.
Yes.
And it's kind of, for me, it's helped to verify or confirm a lot of what I'm talking about, that, you know, the power behind these moments, and that there is a light that goes on. It's not about the brain, as we said earlier. It's a spiritual light. And what one of the great discoveries in giving this talk was, thinking about the whole concept of epiphany. You know, when we think about an aha moment, well, you know, I've just had an epiphany, right? You say that about things. Like, it's just a momentary revelation. And we usually think of epiphany in that way, as a sudden illumination. But the root of the word epiphany, actually, you can look it up in your dictionary, Scott, I promise it's there, is the manifestation of the Christ to the Magi. That's where that word epiphany actually comes from, the manifestation of the Christ to the Magi. In other words, the wise men coming across the desert, not Jews, not members of the same faith that, you know, Jesus was. They were coming across, and they were led by a star. They were led by a light that was guiding them to this little child who really represented this, you know, this sense of love and light, this spiritually enlightened view of life that was coming. And so when I realized that one day, I thought, okay, well, that light is really that Christ light, that spiritual light is what's behind every aha moment we have. well, I would say particularly those spiritual aha moments, you know, that it's this light of divine truth that is illuminating for us. It's revealing more of what God is and more of our own selfhood as God's image and likeness. That's what's going on with these aha moments. So there's a, you know, there's a very powerful, powerful force at work with these aha moments.
I think that's a huge link. And as you described it, as you do the talk, people busily want to tell you theirs. I recognized, oh yeah, I had about three of them listed in my head I was about ready to talk about.
It's
a very powerful force to bring it back to people's minds to recognize that they've had aha moments, and the results that came out of them were transformational.
Yes.
So
there's one that
please.
There's one of these experiences that I share. I learned about and it's very moving to me. What happened? It does involve light in a very vivid way, but it was a woman who was in her early 40s, and she had cancer, and her mother actually had died of the same illness at the same age. And she said that she, you know, she was gripped with all this fear, and she realized how much that experience had impacted her, and that she hadn't realized how much she'd identified with her mother's suffering and the illness. And she thought, you know, this is what's going to happen for me too. And she had she'd learned about Christian Science. She'd begun the study of this science, and still the overwhelming fear of this illness seemed to be just kind of pushing her down. In fact, she described going from a size 12 dress size to a size 6, and you know, really not well at all. And she got to a point where she really didn't think she was going to make it. And she went for a walk one night, and she took her dog with her. And actually, I know the neighbors that live next to her, and the dad who had seen her go out came back in and said, you know, I'm really worried about her. I don't think she's going to make it. And this is actually what she was feeling that night. She really went out for this walk, and she was kind of talking with God, and she says, I'm not going to make it, Father, am I? And she went out on this walk, and she got to this little canal with a bridge going across it, and she saw the reflection of the moon in the water down below. And it was so still, and the moon was so full and so bright, it was like this bright, shiny ball there. And she said to her dog, hey, you know, go get that ball, sweetie. And as she was looking at this reflection, she was so struck by the perfection of the reflection, she was about to lift her head up and look at the moon itself in the sky above her. But she said it was as if something held her head in place. She couldn't move it. And as she was looking at the reflection, she said to herself, I'm looking at the reflection, but I'm seeing the original. And in that moment, she caught a view of herself as that perfect reflection of the original, of God. She knew that that same relationship existed for her, that there was an original, a creator, a source, a power, and that she was the flawless reflection of that original, that she was the evidence of that original, just as that reflected moon was the evidence that the moon existed up in the sky. And she said, as this realization dawned in her, she felt flooded with love, felt just the absolute sense of God's love for her and the sense of her being the very image and likeness, the reflection of God. And all the fear drained away, all the pain, all the sense of the dread that she'd been feeling. And she said she knew in that moment, in that aha moment, that she was well and that this disease, you know, could not progress. And in fact, that was the beginning of this profound spiritual healing she had. She was not undergoing medical treatment. There was no medical treatment given. And in a very short amount of time, all the weight was regained. And, you know, she went on to live this tremendously productive life as a Christian Science practitioner. somebody who, you know, she said she was so grateful for this healing that she wanted to share it with others. And so she went into the practice of healing and helped many others with the same ideas.
Phew. Yeah, I have one big aha moment in my history that I happened to be in Dallas, Texas. It's funny when I go to tell the story, because the nut center of the story is that I had been following my spiritual practices for years, and I was sitting in a difficult circumstance and suddenly had a dawning realization that I was a spiritual being following a spiritual practice no matter where I was and no matter what I was doing. And the transformation of my surroundings that came after that, sort of simple, oh yeah, I'm not just God on Sundays, as it were. It's a huge aha moment in my history. So now that you've been studying aha moments, Chet, what have you figured out about what we can do in our lives to have more of them, preferably without it being a moment of desperation as a lead up?
Well, you know, as I said, they do involve light, the spiritual light. And I've used a simple metaphor that Jesus gave to help me and help others, you know, figure out, well, how can you keep that light shining brightly? He spoke about the 10 virgins. He said 5 were wise and 5 were foolish. And the 5 kept oil in their lamps, and the five wise ones kept oil in their lamps, and the 5 foolish ones didn't. And then he said at midnight, a call was made that the bridegroom has arrived and go in to meet him. And the 5 who were wise lit their lamps, and they could see their way and make their way to the bridegroom, and they went and met him. Where the foolish ones, you know, lit their lamps or tried to, and there was no oil in there. And so they were in darkness. You know, he's speaking metaphorically here. Really, to me, it's about consciousness. It's about, you know, are we keeping our thought full of oil? You know, for you, Scout, for me, for others, you know, that how we keep our mental lamps full of oil might vary a little bit. You know, I have spiritual practices that I really devote myself to every morning, you know, deep communion with God and deep prayer, you know, getting myself, you know, filled up full with inspiration so that I can give out to others. I can share what I'm learning with others. You know, for you, I don't know, maybe it's a walk in the morning, or, you know, you might have your own practice. And for somebody else listening today, you know, they might have another practice. But the point is that we need communion time. We need time to keep our mental lamps full of oil. Somebody once shared the proverb with me that we've got to give of our light, not our oil. Because if you give of your light, you know, others will have light too. If you give of your oil, you'll be depleted and there will be no light. So I believe these aha moments do come much more consistently as a result of this deeper reflection, this deeper communion time. And, you know, Christian Science, for many people, you know, offers, you know, beautiful tools, beautiful resources for that communion. One of them that many people practice every day is reading and praying with something called a Bible lesson, a Christian Science Bible lesson. That, as we mentioned earlier, is the basis of the Sunday church service. It's really this wonderful exploration of a spiritual theme and going into the Bible to find the deeper meaning about that theme. And for a lot of people, and that's part of my daily spiritual practice, is reading that Bible lesson, and not just reading it, but reflecting on it, thinking about it, and asking, you know, how it applies to me, how it applies to other needs that I'm aware of in the world. So we do have to enrich ourselves spiritually, I believe, in order to keep that light glowing.
And one more thing you touched on earlier, we've got about a minute and a half, so one more thing you touched on earlier is just the word love and our own gifts and talents. Just weave those together a little bit as we lead out here.
Yeah. Well, God is crazy about you. I know, you know.
Thanks.
You're doing what you love. You're doing what you love, Scout. And you know what? You're good at it. And people feel the love and the inspiration and the insight. And that love that fills you and flows through you is a reflection of God's love for you. When we're when we tap into what we love most and feel that love of God for us, you know, we discover our greatest gifts and talents in life. I'm convinced of that. And that's what you and I spoke of last time, that other talk I was giving, let love lead. You know, it's tapping into that, you know, that deeper sense of what is it? What is my life purpose? What are my great gifts and talents that God has showered me with? You know, loving them, getting to know them, and then sharing them with the world in a way to share that love with others. You know, that, boy, that's nothing more beautiful than that.
And I frequently find when I'm talking to people about their own gifts and talents, I frequently find that we have a tendency to assume that our most gifted areas are the only parts of us that are adequate, and that somehow we need to focus on the other parts of us instead, which would have had you following a business path somewhere in the Midwest rather than the art that has led you to the practices you have now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's so true. That, you know, we have an inner compass that, you know, that leads us to our deepest gifts and talents. And I believe that the greatest gift we all have is actually healing, that within each one of us is a healer. And that's what Jesus was trying to awaken us to, that we all have that capacity to not only be healed, but to heal others by learning to reflect this love.
Well, I will speak from here. I think Chet, this is mine, Scout Bartlett. We're talking with Chet Manchester, and I think Chet is an illuminating light that does bring forward your own recognition of your light within yourself. So I want to remind you that you can register for Chet's webinar. The webinar will be presented September 25th. You can register at the website for the First Church of Christ Scientists Los Altos. Their website is christiansciencelosaltos.org. Chet, I just want to say thank you very much again. This has been an absolute delight.
Oh, thank you, Scout. So good to reconnect with you.
Thanks. And this is Spiritual Perspectives. I'm Scout like Pathfinder, Bartlett like Pears, asking every one of you two favors. One, treat yourself as a loved one because you truly are. And no matter where on earth you are, it's a perfect day to have a great day on purpose.